I don't usually buy really nice shoes. So I don't know what that means exactly. I guess I'll have to go and ask what that means. I'll find out. Let's see if we get up there. We do. This has been working this year. You know, we have been talking about reframing things, and tonight I was going to actually talk about reframing the idea of love, but this morning while I was talking about family, and as I was going over those notes, I thought, you know, I stole so much stuff from the one on love with the family that I was rambling on, so that I thought, I'm going to switch it. I'm going to go to leadership instead. So I want to reframe the idea of leadership and what it is, because I don't think we understand what it is. And so let's pray, and we'll get into that. Father, thank you so much for your love and your guidance for this church and for a place that we can come to and just hear your word, where we can come when we're hurting and be around people who love us, where we can come when we're rejoicing and be around people who will rejoice. And even as we're here and they're sharing the burden of our building that burnt, you knew that was going to happen. And I thank you for their kindness towards that. Now be with us tonight. Let your spirit speak to our hearts. In Jesus' name, amen. Once again, I want to remind you that there's a way that we think. It's important that we have definition in life. And definitions need to be properly understood. Definitions cannot be made up. If you make up a definition, you're not going to get it. You know, sometimes we travel around and people are saying, you know, what is truth? Kind of like, how do you know truth? Well, there is truth. And truth, by the way, by definition, as I've said before here years ago, is narrow. It's not broad. I am wearing a gray sweater. How many colors of sweater am I not wearing? Yeah, all the rest, however many there are, that many I'm not wearing. And probably there's a lot of shades of gray. Dumb phrase right there, but there's probably a lot of those. And so, but I'm only wearing one of them, not many of them. I'm wearing one of them. And what's interesting is if you were to say I'm wearing red, you would be wrong. You have so many ways to be wrong and only one way to be right. Now, we could go with that on everything that we talk about. I mean, there is an absolute. There is truth. And for anyone to declare there isn't truth, that's silly. You know, there is. And so we need to start there. There is truth. So there is definition to things. And when we have definition, we get clarity. And when we have clarity, we have certainty. And when we have certainty, we can have peace. And so Satan works the opposite. He works towards making sure the definition is not clear. He works toward making sure then, once the definition isn't clear, that obviously we have no clarity in life, so things are blurry to us. Have you ever walked around with blurred vision? Bummer. I mean, really, that's a terrible thing to have. But once you get it cleared up, it's really great. I am a freak about keeping my glasses clean. I just, you know, one little speck on there, and I'm trying to wipe it off. I'm getting the little wipes, you know, I'm going like, gotta have it. Like, I love clarity. I love it in life too. You know, the person who leads or commands a group, organization, or country, when you look up the term leadership, this is what you're going to find. Person who leads. The assumption is that if you're a leader, you have somebody following you. Now, that may be by the word leader, I guess, and how it's used, but it's not the concept I want to bring before you. Because the concept I'm going to bring before you has people in it that nobody followed. The idea of an Ezekiel, for example. He was doing exactly what he should have done. He's in the Bible, but nobody followed him. Leadership does not mean, in the sense of how the world looks at it, that somebody necessarily is following you. It really has a different definition to it. Now, again, some might argue that by the way we use it in our culture, it means somebody has to follow. And I've heard several times, if nobody's following you, you're not leading. But you know what that leads to? It leads us to be people who are more concerned with getting people to follow us than actually being good followers and doing what we should do. Think of the people, if I was godless, if God wasn't in my life, and I wanted to have power. The only way I can get power is from the people. So what I do is I manipulate the people in order to get power, like Hitler did. I manipulate to get power, because that's where I get my power. And so Hitler had a majority of people following him, but they were wrong. All of them were wrong that did that. So it's not the idea of manipulation. Is a leader one who manipulates, is my question. No, is a leader one who does whatever it takes to get people to do what they want them to? No, see, but that's a lot of times what leadership is defined. It's defined as people following you. And you will be told if you go to seminars, if nobody's following you, you're not leading. Well, no, you know what? That's not where our focus is. It certainly may be that some people will follow us. But the truth of the matter is, if you're walking with God and you're doing what you're supposed to do, it is up to God to determine who's following, and they will find you and they will follow. There will be many people that will not follow. As a teacher, for all my life, I think I am the greatest failure that ever walked the planet. There are so many more people that have not listened to me than listened to me. There are so many more that have not been a part of what they should be than ever will accept what I've said. So therefore, by looking at it just in human terms, I'm a failure. I shouldn't be doing what I'm doing. I've spoken on the radio and all over the country, all over the world. I've spoken to thousands and thousands and thousands of people, and I think there's a very small minority of them who have actually responded. So either I'm the world's worst teacher, or that's the nature of life. I can't force anybody to respond. You think, look at Ezekiel, and we're going to look at him a little bit later. Here's a man who went out and did everything God told him to do, and nobody listened to him anyway. Was he successful? It's not necessarily a person who leads or commands a group. I would suggest you right from the beginning that the quality of a leader, the only quality that matters, is that they're a good follower. And that really takes it completely away from what we look at it in our culture and in our society. If we look at the scriptures, though, in John 10:27, my sheep listen to my voice. I know them, and they follow me. I find that interesting verse where Jesus says, my sheep listen to my voice. They listen to me. And then the next three words are interesting. I know them. Why didn't he say that the sheep know him? They know his voice. But the shepherd knows me. And they follow me. That's what they do. They follow me. You see in John 10, but as for you, you are not believing because you are not of the sheep which are mine. The sheep which are mine are in the habit of listening to my voice. And I know them by experience, and they take the same road that I take with me. Now, this is interesting. That's the Weiss translation. I like that translation. It's a little bit more expanded. It's kind of like if you were speaking Spanish sometimes, you reverse the order and stuff, and it's a little cumbersome if you're just to translate it exactly into English. But Weiss will translate it exactly. It's a little bit more cumbersome at times. But if you listen to what he's saying, there's, but as for you, you are not believing because you're not sheep. Here's one thing we understand, that if you really are a child of God, if you really do know God, then you're going to listen to him. The people that don't obey God do not know him. He said, wait a minute. No, I'm not saying those who once in a while decide I'm going to be a rebellious child. That's not what I'm talking about. Those who habitually don't follow God, they don't know him. And if they don't know him, what relationship do they have with him in the first place? We need to be people who actually seek God and know him. When we do, we're going to know who he is. Sheep are mentioned in the Bible more than 500 times. They're mentioned more than any other animal in the Bible. That's interesting. The prominence of sheep in the Bible grows out of two realities. Number one, sheep were important to the nomads and the agricultural life of the Hebrews and similar people. Secondly, sheep are used throughout the Bible to symbolically refer to God's people, and therefore they're used. I find something very interesting about sheep, and I want to share that with you, because I think if we want to learn how to be leaders, we have to learn about sheep. Because sheep are so important to understand as far as the illustration and the picture that God's painting. Sheep are not dumb, as a lot of us have thought they might be. In fact, they're pretty bright in some areas. The one thing, though, that they are is followers. That's for sure. John 17:4, I glorified you on earth, having accomplished the work you gave me to do. Jesus says this, if we're following Jesus, that's what we're thinking about. I'm thinking about doing what Jesus did. What did Jesus do? He followed God. He says in John 17, you know, I showed the world who you are. He said in 17:6, I have manifested your name to the people who you gave me out of the world. Yours they were, and you gave them to me. Now, you know, Jesus saying, I actually followed you, God. You gave me an assignment. I listened. I did what you asked me to do. You know what that did? That qualified Jesus to be somebody we should follow. Because he was following. And if you look at John 17, it's a very simple thing. He says, I have followed God, now you should follow me, and if you're following me, then you'll be following God. Look at the Apostle Paul, what he said. I am following God, you should follow me, Timothy. If you follow me, you'll be following God. See, the pattern there is following. The pattern isn't, I'm going to tell you what to do. The pattern is, watch me and what I do. See, it isn't, I am the leader, so I get to boss you around. It isn't, I am the leader, so I get to tell you what to do. It's, I am the leader, so I get to demonstrate to you how to live. I am the leader, so I get to show you how to live. That's what I get to do. I get to show it to you. And you get to watch me. And you know what's going to happen? I'm going to stand before God someday, and I'm going to give an account for how I lived in front of you. One of the things that I really have a beef on with young leaders especially is that they refuse to adjust their life so that others can watch them. A true leader, if they're a follower, they're going to adjust their life in every possible way because they realize leadership is about following. They're going to adjust their life. They're going to adjust it so that young people can look at them and imitate everything they do to excess and still be doing well. Oh no, then I have to limit my life. You bet you do. Look what they talked about in 1 Corinthians when they're talking about meat offered to idols. It was very clear saying the meat doesn't mean anything. The meat means nothing. The meat means nothing. However, don't eat it. Why? Because if you eat it, you're going to be bothering some young person. Don't do that. Don't ever put yourself in a position where you say, I have the right to do this and I'm going to do it, and somebody else has a problem because of it. Don't you ever do that. Because you're thinking of other people. See, leaders are always thinking of others, not themselves. They're always thinking of making somebody else successful, not themselves. They are always thinking about what it takes to show somebody else what's necessary. You know, if you come to my house, you can go in my fridge, you can look at, I love just being an open book for anybody. Come and see it. Our house is clean. You can walk through it. You can open our fridge. I'll promise you, you'll find no alcohol there. Why? I don't want to have any there because of, you know, people in the church, are you going to drink? You know what I'm doing? None. You're not going to find it there. You're a young person. You can follow everything I do, and you can open the fridge. You can go through the drawers. You can do what you want to do. You're not going to find a thing there that you can't do. You're not going to find one CD, one movie there that you couldn't watch. In fact, I don't even think we have any. I think our VCR is still blinking. No, we don't even have a VCR, I don't think, anymore, because who has those? We have tapes. We have no way to play them. You see, I don't want to do it. I told you this morning I didn't have cable television. I don't have that. I have an antenna that flips around and it turns off when things are going on. And yeah, I need to be able to adjust my life. You know, can I have cable television? Probably. Can I have CD player or however they do movies? I probably. You know, though, I need to readjust my life so that the next generation can do anything that I'm doing. And they can do it to excess, because they will do it to excess. They will do it to excess. And I need to be the example for them. And if I'm a leader and I'm following God, I'm following and I'm submitting to the fact that they're going to follow me, and I'm going to stand before God for it someday. So one of the things I see about sheep and what God says is that they're followers, man. That's what they do. And we have to understand that that's what they do. And Jesus desires that they're one like we're one. You know what else I found out about sheep? They have keen senses. And read this so I get it right. Sheep have excellent senses. Their wide-angle vision allows them to see predators. They can direct their ears to the direction of sound. They are very sensitive to what predators smell like. They have these senses. In Hebrews 6:11-12, it says, "And we desire each of you to show the same earnestness to have the full assurance of hope until the end, so that you may not be sluggish, but imitators of those who through their faith and patience inherit the promises." What's interesting here is that the sheep have these keen senses that they've developed, and they're aware of the dangers around them. What's happening with a lot of leaders today is they're not even aware of the dangers around them. They're not aware of the fact that God made us His followers, so they're not adjusting their life to do anything. They're saying, well, I can do this, it shouldn't affect them. No, you know what? There are dangers around us, and we need to be careful with them. There are always dangers. I would guarantee you, if the fire inspector ever figures out why that building burnt at camp, we're going to figure out something we should have probably done differently. Now, I'm not saying that one day, all of a sudden, poof, it blew up and everything was done right. Something was wrong there. There was wiring wrong. There was gas leak. I'm not saying that we did it on purpose. We just don't know. But there's some reason why it happened. You see, and what we want to do in the future is be diligent not to let that happen again, whatever that is. So we need to keen up our senses a little bit. We need to know, did I leave this on? Did I leave that on? Did this happen? Did we turn this off? Is the wiring going to... See, you want to realize that all of those things are potential dangers. You know, sheep figuring out where the danger is. You know, we shouldn't be people who sit for hours and hours and watch sitcoms and watch hours and hours of media and movies. We shouldn't be doing that. Why? There's great danger in that. In fact, I was telling you, I don't even have the cable stuff, and I watch the news. I try and watch the news, which is not overly exciting. And I'll try and watch a Packer game and that kind of stuff. But you know what's interesting to me is I can't handle the ads. They're dark. They're sexually deviant. I can't handle the ads. I'm just the news. I don't want any young ladies watching the football game with me. Why? Because I have to be quick on turning the ads off. I got narcolepsy. I might doze off for a second, and then it's there. And then they're talking about something where I don't think they ought to be talking about on television or anything else. And I'm thinking, you know what? We have to understand the danger. Some people are going, don't worry about it. You know, it's the culture we live in. No, we're getting desensitized to the dangers. We ought to hate the darkness. We ought to hate it when there's sexual deviance being portrayed as normal. We can't allow our senses to start dulling up. That won't work. No, we have to. What's interesting there is if you look at that, the passage in Hebrews talks about being watchful against all sin. You know, not just the sins that we find gross. I mean, you're going to find sins gross. You're not going to, I don't want to participate in that. No, all sins. Greed. Gossip. You know what? You should never accept gossip. Gossip destroys. It is as destructive as anything out there. It is the thing in the evangelical world that's the atom bomb. You know, this guy's talking about this guy, but they don't talk to the guy they should talk to. You ever hear that? You stop it because it's not going to work that way. See, that's what's happened is our senses are being dulled. We're starting to believe that people can talk to me. And yeah, they're just sharing. No, they're not. They're gossiping. Now, if somebody starts talking to you about somebody else, you know what you say? Wait, did you talk to that person about it? No, then don't talk to me. Oh, well, aren't you hoity-toity or whatever? No, I'm actually not allowing you to talk to me about this because that's sin, and I'm sensitive to it, and it will destroy. I am not going to let you destroy things. You don't allow that. There's so many times where we just don't say anything, and I find out when I don't say anything, I'm losing that sensitivity. And not only that, when I don't say anything, someone says, yeah, well, Dave agrees with me. And I go, I agree with you? Yeah, you didn't say anything. No. You know, we can't allow our senses to start getting dulled. We need to be people who wait at the feet of God. It's interesting, you go on, that sheep are very high in pain tolerance, believe it or not. 2 Timothy 2:3, the Bible tells us, share in the suffering as a good soldier of Jesus Christ. Why share in the suffering? They have a great pain tolerance. They don't show pain. You know why sheep don't show pain? They've just tried to figure out why. But a lamb will get hurt or whatever. They will not limp. They will not show pain. Not unless they have to. It shows a weakness. They attack it. I played hockey in college. You know, hockey doesn't have to have injury reports. And you know why they don't have injury reports? Because when you're playing hockey and you get an injury report, guy says his knee's a little sore or whatever, that's what you go for. You're going to wipe that knee out as soon as you can. So hockey has a way of lying. And you know what I learned in football too? When I played football and you got injured, you had to act like you weren't injured, because if they saw you limping, if they saw something that didn't work, the next play, that's what they're attacking. Why? They want you out. So you had to act like you weren't hurt, because if you were hurt, they attacked you. Same with lambs. They understand that they have to tolerate pain. Let me tell you, the Bible tells us that if you walk with God and you love God, you're going to live in pain. There is no way around it. There is no possible way around it, because anybody, you're doing God's work and you're doing God's work God's way, you get ready for pain. There is no possible way to escape it. The thing is in the pain, that's when you see God. I mean, we had that fire, just shared that with you, obviously. Now, you know, the next day, yes, somebody emailed me, texted me and said, Dave, I'm bringing over $100,000 this morning. I sat there and wept. I said, no kidding. Your gift here, and I got a text just this afternoon, another one of, my brother actually said it at his church, somebody handed him $20,000 to put towards this. Guess what? Through the pain, what are we seeing? If the building wouldn't have burnt down, would we see this generosity? Would we see the heart of God? Would we see the heart of the people? Would we understand that God is beyond this earth? No, but the building's not there, and it's only begun, because there's a long way to go to fix this thing. But God keeps pounding on the door saying, yeah, in the middle of the pain, I am going to show you something. Those people who avoid pain, they avoid blessing. If you, the one book I have out there is Nehemiah, and one of the tenets of that book is very simple. When there's resistance, you as a believer need to turn and run into it. Because if you run away from it, you're a loser. Because that resistance is there for a reason. And any soldier knows that. Any athlete knows that. If they're trying to stop you from going over there, then that's where you need to be. Because that's where the action is. Guess what comes with that? Pain. Sheep are very good at tolerating pain. They realize they have to endure it. Sheep understand their safety in numbers. If you ever notice, they huddle together. One of the worst things that they can do is get scattered. Galatians 6:2, bear one another's burden, so you fulfill the law of Christ. The shepherd will work very hard at making sure no sheep or no lambs go stray, because they can't fight by themselves. In the group, their strength. So they stay as a group. It's very important that they do that. You know what Satan wants to do? He wants to isolate people. He wants to get one against another. He wants to get them so they move away from the group, because in the group, their strength. See, you see how many parallels are with sheep? I mean, in the group, their strength. If somebody in this room is not doing what they should do, other people in this room will say, stop it, you're not doing what you should do. See, the strength in this group, there's strength there. Well, there isn't if people aren't following God. But if they're following God, there's strength there. Does it get tiring? Sure it does. The alternative isn't good, though. You let the flock split up, the wolves have a heyday. It's just the way it is. You don't let the flock get split up, because the wolves will have a heyday. And you can watch, you can mark my words, those who separate from the flock eventually get consumed by the wolves. The flock needs to be there, and it needs to be strong. There's safety in numbers. Bear one another's burden. They flee, they do not fight. Very important principle with sheep. Sheep are a prey animal. When they're faced with danger, they never look at their predator and fight. They run. And they run as a group. We get it wrong in our culture. So often we want to fight what we shouldn't fight. We should be running from it. In 2 Timothy 2:22, flee youthful passions and pursue righteousness. Flee. Pursue. What do you flee? Evil. How do you flee evil? Well, don't watch it on television. Don't watch it on your computer. Don't allow it to be in the school. I mean, don't allow that stuff in your head. You flee that stuff. Why? You cannot fight it. You say, oh, yes, I can. No, you can't. God wrote this. There's no way that a lamb is ever going to fight a lion and win. There's no way a lamb is going to fight a coyote and win. It's like this. Have you ever stopped at camp? We got the Wolf River there, and the Wolf River is a river that flows very nicely, and it hasn't been at flood stage in many, many years. Really hard to get it up that high. But one year it was that high. It wasn't flood stage necessarily, but it was that high. And the normal raft trip for our group is an hour and a half. If you put them in the one spot, you pick them up about an hour and a half later. And so if it's going really fast, the trip's about an hour. The normal really, really fast, about 45 minutes, man, that's about double speed. That's a fantastic ride on that little trip. And I remember once there was a group, and they mostly spoke Polish, and we dropped them off. And they nodded their head like they understood what I was saying. But I was actually saying, you know, it's the only bridge you go under, you need to be on the right side because I need to get you out of the water and I need to get you out fast. Well, they went by and they waved at me as they went by. And I didn't think much about it. I just ran into the river and I forgot how high the river was. And I thought, no big deal. I was a swimmer in high school, big athlete, no problem. Boom, the river took me. I was gone. You ever see those cars and those floods just get taken away? Houses just swept right away. That's what it's talking about in the Bible in Romans like 12. We have to be careful because we can't be conformed to the world. The world will take us. You think you could stand in the middle of that river? You think you can, but you can't. That's why the warning about fleeing. I could say all I want. I could get in the river. The answer for floods are stay away from them. It's not, I'm going to go show you, I'll just step in that river and it won't take me anywhere. No, it will. It will take you. I will be able to do this with my life, I'll be able to watch this on television, I'll be able to listen to this, I'll be able... No, you won't, it will take you. See, sheep do not run into danger, they run away from it. In that sense. We run into danger when we're running against the evil one. We run away against the evil one in the sense of it being hard. We run away from the temptations and the things that are so easily entangled with. And it's wise to know the difference. 2 Timothy 2:23, have nothing to do with foolish, ignorant controversies. Have nothing to do with them. There comes a time where you say, I'm done. Why? This is ignorant and foolish. Yeah. That was 2 Timothy 2:23. Have nothing to do with foolish, ignorant controversies. And you know what the next phrase in that is? You know that they only breed quarrels. Now people go, well, I'll straighten this out. And you go into it and it's an ignorant controversy that nobody... No. You know how I know it's ignorant? When it's really just about me, there's no way for you to win. When I'm convinced it's just about the person I'm talking to, I'll walk away. It's like, this is going nowhere. You can't. There's no way to have a discussion right now. Why? Because it's only about you. And when you focus on you, and that's all you're doing, there's no way to win that one for anybody. Have nothing to do with foolish, ignorant controversies. I can have people come to me and talk to me about things I can't even understand. Scientists can come and say, did you understand this? They love telling you all this stuff you don't even know. You can't even understand their language. And when you're done talking to them, you feel about that big and intellectually inept. Oh, I could never argue with them. No, you can't. Not on their level. They're using words you can't even understand. They're using, but here's the deal. Their argument is foolish because it's going against God. And when God fights, he doesn't fight with sophistication. He fights with simple. He fights when he sent Jesus to this earth. And Mary was his mother. And he was born in a manger. And it was the shepherds who came and saw him. You know, the guys who watched the sheep. Those guys. The shepherds who thought, the society thought they were the lowest of the low. They were the ones who came. Jesus had a way of doing everything simple. You know, we have to flee youthful lust. Sheep tracks are never straight. Did you know that? They don't walk in a straight line. And there's a reason for that. They don't walk in a straight line because they are very aware of the dangers and they adjust lives to dangers. They like walking and they like turning because they like seeing angles and seeing around them because of the dangers. If they walk in one straight line, they always have one blind spot. But they're always aware that they can't have a blind spot. So they do things differently so that they never have a blind spot for too long. What are they aware of? They're aware that the predator, have you ever seen a lion just kind of crouch and wait? They're aware that that's how they work. They're just waiting. They want to know where the lion is. So they move side to side so they can see it, different angles. Satan is just waiting for you, you know. Take a look at the life of Solomon. Solomon was the wisest man that ever walked the planet. But the end of his life was disastrous. Satan, pretty much, you can almost hear him say, I'll wait. You think that idea about having 1,000 wives is a good idea? I'll wait. It won't be a good idea, I promise. And it wasn't. Because if you look in the Bible, it was his wives that turned his heart. It was a bad idea. And it took a while for him to get there, but it was a bad idea. You see, the Bible tells us that we need to be strong in the Lord and in the strength of his might. And we look at Hebrews chapter 6, and Ephesians chapter 6, and you go look at that, and you realize that God gives us a way to fight, but we can't believe we're not in a fight. You are in a fight right now. Right now you're in a fight. Right now. Oh, you might not be aware of it, but your enemy is. And here, you know what else your enemy likes to do? He likes to wound you, not hurt you, not kill you. You know why he likes to wound you? Do you ever know the strategy back in Vietnam, what happened? At other times in war, the enemy realized that we Americans are strange. We don't leave anyone behind. If a comrade of ours falls out there, we're going to pick him up and bring him with us. We do that. Anyone here fight? Anyone here a veteran? Is that true? Am I right on that? We take our comrades home. Absolutely. We'll take them home. The guys I knew that fought in Nam, that was it, man. We bring them home. We bring them home in a bag. We bring them home in pieces. We bring home, but we will bring them home. See, we're strange that way as a group. We won't abandon our people. Well, once the enemy found that out, they used it against us. They actually gave instructions that they should shoot them, not to kill, but to wound, because they realized that everybody they would wound would take 3 soldiers to take care of them. If you killed them, they would let them and come back later and get them, and they'd still fight. So what they figured was, let's have a bunch of wounded. You know what the church does so many times? There's wounded people, and we're so busy taking care of them that we can't fight the war anymore. And Satan's going, exactly, you won't get the wounded out of there anymore. There comes a time where you say, you know what? You've been wounded, you've been wounded, you've been wounded. It's time to heal up. Because you're taking all of our resources. We can no longer fight the war anymore. We're just taking care of our own people. We're here to fight a war. Ephesians 6, be strong in the Lord, put on the whole armor. It goes on. We don't wrestle against flesh and blood. You know, a leader understands that. So a leader is a follower. They keep their senses sharp. They don't want to be desensitized to things. They understand they're going to live in pain because they're going into the resistance. They understand the safety in numbers. They understand that they need to run from youthful lust, not fight them, not say I need to be strong enough. I had a guy that was a youth pastor once, and I went and asked him, I said, so are you, do you have a internet block at home? You're a single guy. Do you have a block on your internet for, you know, making sure things are safe? No. You know, I think I need to be able to stand up against that temptation. I just listened to him talk for a while, and I said, you know what? You either get one, or I'm quitting working at this church. I said, you need to understand something. You do not fight against youthful lusts. You run from them. So you need to make it so you can't get it. Well, isn't that legalistic, whatever? You call it whatever you want. But the truth of the matter is there's a principle out there. You do not make provision for the flesh. Because when you make provision for the flesh, you lose. Now, you say that's leadership. Really? You think this guy followed me? He didn't follow me. He didn't want to follow me. So I guess I'm not leading. Or am I leading? Am I leading if nobody follows? Follow the pattern. 2 Timothy, the Apostle Paul says, follow the pattern of sound words that you have heard from me in the faith and love that are in Christ Jesus. The Apostle Paul made no apologies. Follow me. He wasn't being arrogant here. This is how God designed it. When you heard me talk about the family this morning, he designed it so fathers and mothers can be examples to their children. He designed it so that couples can be examples to the world. Follow me. I have decided I am following God, and that's how I lead. Now you follow me. And if A equals B and B equals C, then A equals C. That's just how it works. And we need to understand that. If anyone serves me, John 12:26, he must do what? He must follow me. And where I am, there will my servant also be also. If anyone serves me, the Father will honor him. If you just follow me, the Father will honor you. You know, it's really cool. The word servant is used a lot, and Paul uses it a lot to describe himself. Servant, 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 servant. What does a servant do? He gets up and he waits for the orders of his master. What does he want to do? I want to follow the master. That's it. Don't you need to take care of yourself? Don't need to. That's the master's job. It's his job to make sure we're fed. It's his job to make sure we're cared for. My job is to make sure I follow. That's it. That's all you got to do. You know how simple that makes life? I don't have to make it all up. I just got to follow. Our building's burning. I'm standing there. You have the typical emotions, and pretty soon you're going, okay, God, what do we do next? Why? It's your building. I just got to follow. I don't have to lead this one. I don't have to tell anyone what we have to do. I still don't know what to do. But it's your building. You're going to make it evident. All we got to do is praise you and follow you. I got a text. I forget it exactly, but it was from one of the former kids I was mentoring, and I'm still trying to meet with him once in a while. He was up at camp this weekend just raking leaves with some kids. And he texted and he said, it is so good. And I wasn't there, so I don't know. I don't know what the atmosphere right now is there because I'm here. And he said, it's so good to be in this atmosphere where you really see God. He said, it's amazing, he said. The building's gone. I see people working and laughing and enjoying each other and trusting God. He said, it's something like I wish it was that way in other places. I don't know what it's like. I'm not there right now. But I can tell you this, that building burning down will be something that will allow us to either follow God or follow our emotions, or follow our... Yeah. It'll show who we're following. My sheep hear my voice, and I know them, and they follow me. Luke 9:23. And he said to all... Pardon me? Oops. I don't care. I just hit wrong buttons. John 10:27. I'm sorry. And he said to all in Luke 9:23, if anyone would come after me, if anyone really wants to follow me, I'll tell you how to do it. Deny himself, we talked about that, and take up his cross daily and follow me. That's it. Yeah, if we're going to make disciples, this is what we focus on. Because Jesus said, here's how they do it. If anyone would come after me, let him do what? Deny himself. If you're not willing to deny yourself, if you're going to be in the middle of controversy all the time, you're sitting there, look, this has got to be about me. This has got to be about my life. This has got to be about my... Deny yourself. Why don't you make it about others? Why don't you make it about God? There's something right about those who make it about God. They got this humble spirit. They walk and play. They make it about God. See, we deny ourselves. The thing I talked about this morning, marriage, deny yourself. And take up our cross. What is the cross? The cross, what was the cross to Jesus? It was the reason he came to this earth. He came here to die. You know what I'm being told here? Jesus is saying, you want to follow me? First, deny yourself. Jesus denied himself. What did he gain from coming down to this earth? For himself. He denied himself. He gave up heaven for a while. He Can you imagine a God who is timeless and ever, all of a sudden being locked in time in a body? And he denied himself. His purpose was to die. Here's what I understand as a follower of Jesus Christ. That I will never be what I should be as far as leadership unless I deny myself. And that I will never be what I should be unless I pick up the purpose that God gave me every day. I don't know the purpose. Should I be a camp director? Should I be a president? Should I be on radio? That's not what I'm talking about. I know the revealed purpose for me. I know the Bible makes it clear that I was created to glorify God. Glorifying God means that how I live shows the world who He is. That's what I was created to do. So today, as I deny myself and I live towards showing the world who He is, so if our building burns, I need to use it to show the world who He is. So if there's a sickness or illness, I need to, show the world who He is. If no matter what happens in life, I need to show the world who He is. That's what I need to do. You know how often we just forget and we start thinking about ourselves? I mean, God has reminded me so much how I mess up in this area. There's a couple of things. God wants to provide for us. I know who He is. I know His character. I'll tell you one quick story. There's a guy that I had a, he saw me. I was using an S10 to get my wood. And he thought that was silly. So he had bought a new truck and he had an old truck, a couple hundred thousand miles. I'm supposed to pick up and he gave it to me. And it's a nice, I think it's a great truck. I use it for wood. That's all I use it for. So I have this truck and I use it for wood And so one day, the little engine light went on. And they, oh, bummer. And so I went over to our mechanic, and he plugged in something that's not there anymore. But he plugged in something to read it and to figure out, what was wrong with it and told me. And so I thought it was spark plugs and something, and it wasn't. And then it ended up, it's a Toyota Tundra truck, and it ended up being a timing belt that jumped. And he said, oh, that isn't good. So I said, oh man, so what do I need to do? He goes, I don't know, it depends, it's a pretty big job actually. This is an older truck, I don't want to put money into it, I just use it for wood. And he was saying, the last guy that got one done was about an $1,800 job, I'm thinking, no kidding. Yeah. Well, in between we had a meeting. I don't know if you realize we just put up a new chapel at camp, which is another miracle story in all of itself. But we were kind of running out of money to even do that, and we were just doing it by faith anyway. So we were about $150,000 behind on that, and I thought, well, we should probably slow down a little bit and just catch up a little bit. I don't know. Maybe that's not faith. Maybe that's just sense. I have no idea what I'm doing, but let's try it. And so we were going to slow down, but we needed to get in there by the in September early, and I thought, well, let's get in there then. Let's get in. But what's stopping us? We brought the guys together and we said, what's stopping us from getting in there? And well, we need a projector. And I thought, oh yeah, that projector you're using is no good. You're right. We do need a projector if we're going to get in there. But we don't need carpet yet because we could do it with cement floor. And we really don't need a new sound system. We use the old sound system, but we do need a projector. I said, well, how much can a projector be really? $11,000. I said, are you kidding me? $11,000 for a projector? What are we buying? A gold projector that projects gold? I mean, what are we doing? No, it's just a big projector in a big room, and it needs that kind of thing. And we needed a screen, too. And I thought, okay. We have a rule. If there's a need, we believe our Heavenly Father will provide it. Not a want, necessarily, but a need. And that was a need. And all of the guys there, we're $150 in debt. All the guys there said, it's a need. Go ahead and order it. Our Heavenly Father will provide. So then this is going to fit into the truck. So I called a friend of mine who's a mechanic, and I said, could you take a look at this truck and let me know if it's a piece of junk or not? And he goes, yeah, get somebody to drop it off. And so, and while I was on the phone, he goes, so how's the chapel project going? I said, well, we're at this stage, and we're just waiting now for a projector. And he goes, how much do you need for that? And I said, well, yeah, $11,000. Okay, so he went and actually fixed my truck, and he calls me up and says, hey, I'm going to bring your truck out to you. Well, that's unusual to have your mechanic friend bring your truck all the way out to you, from 30 miles, kind of thing. So he then said, yeah, I'm going to bring the truck out to you. And so he brought the truck out to me. And as he handed it to me, I went to get the checkbook from Linda to pay for it and didn't know what it was yet. And he said, no, I'll give you a check instead. He gave me $11,000 for that projector. You see, what I was doing was moaning and groaning, and what God was doing was saying, I need to break down your truck so I can get you connected with this guy, so that I can get that projector paid for. Well, it gets better yet. So then I said, okay, man, that's amazing, God. So he wouldn't take any money for it, and I thought, you just broke down my truck, God, to pay for that projector, because I wouldn't have got together with this guy at all, and you just needed to get us together. So thank you and forgive me for being such a moaner. So then I'm getting some wood, and I think Linda came home, saw me sitting in the truck just kind of pouting. The light went on again. And I'm just in there pouting at this point. I am. I'm thinking, okay, this truck's done. I mean, second light, you know, because some guys warned me. They said, you know, I haven't seen that light go on and fix it without something getting bent and the truck's no good anymore. I thought, oh, man, it's ruined. My wood truck is ruined. I'm sitting there actually pouting. I'm not praying, I'm not doing anything. I'm just pouting. You think I would know by now, don't you? That it doesn't even matter anyway. I mean, the truck was given to me. I could push it off a cliff. I should be okay with that. So I'm sitting there pouting, but I have my moments, and you know what's really funny? Sometimes I'll pout for a minute, and I'll say, okay, I'm done. I get up and go. I mean, I had my little moan time, and I'm done with it. And a little while before that, our program guy, this next summer, we're having a Western theme, and our program guy came and said, you know, it's going to be a Western theme. And I said, well, what one piece of equipment would you like? He said, I'd love a stagecoach. Well, I happened to find one on Craigslist. It was really an authentic stagecoach. And I called the guy, and we ended up getting it, and it happened to be delivered on a Wednesday. So Linda and I are going, we're going for a walk. Like I said, we walk all the time. And that particular day, there was a mother bear and a couple cubs in the way, so we turned around and left, turned around early and started head back. And I said, hey, Linda, you want to see this stagecoach? It came today. They brought it over in. And sure. Well, in the meantime, I called my mechanic buddy again, and I said, you know, here's what happened. I understand. He goes, really? I'm going to come and pick that up. So I said, okay, well, okay. That's unusual, too, that you come and pick it up, but that's okay. And so he said, yeah, I'm going to come pick that up. And so he said, I'll come Wednesday, and he homeschools his kids. I told him, hey, if you're coming, can you look at the stagecoach? It's really cool. I mean, just come take a look at it. So we're going to look at the stagecoach, and all of a sudden I see him walking across the field. He's going to look at the stagecoach, and we're looking at it together. And I mean, it's a cool stagecoach. And so we're looking at this thing. It's really cool. And I can give you another story on how God provided that, but that was really cool. And so then, you know, I needed some. I told the program guys, you need to house this somewhere. You need to put it somewhere. I am so glad it wasn't in that building. But you need to house it somewhere. And we need to paint it. And okay. So while he was here, this guy's his son, his 17-year-old son I got to know, and boy, he refinished cars, that's good. And I said, hey, what paint would you use on this anyway? He said, well, I don't know, I'd use auto paint there, and that's about our discussion. And so then he took my truck, and I went to, next day I was doing OpenNet Radio, which is probably on right now, on Q90. It's a program that you can podcast. It's for, you know, it's just one of those programs. And so I was doing the program with our program guy, and afterwards I said, you know what? What are you going to do about that stagecoach? We can't leave it outside. He goes, I don't know. I got to get it painted. And I said, hey, you know what? This guy, his son, I bet you if we contacted him, maybe, as I'm talking, the phone rings, and it's him. And he goes, you know, my family and I were talking last night. Do you think you would let us take that stagecoach and repaint it and store it for the winter? And immediately I thought, God, you wrecked my truck a second time. So that we could get something done. And then I went there and I went to pick it up. And again, I took a check out and I was going to write a check for paying for it. And he goes, no. He says, here. And he handed me another check. And this check was for a couple of people. He found out they needed to pay for a retreat that they couldn't. He said, I want to pay for them. And so each time my truck has broke down, it's been something miraculous. You know, it's interesting. Something about my life, I don't want to deny myself. I want to sit there and feel sorry for myself. When God is going, would you just let me work? I haven't asked you to have, I want you to just follow me. I want you to just love me, just follow me. Just, you know, if your truck blows up, don't you think I got another plan for you? Not only that, I want to use your stupid truck. You and this guy, Steve, you're not talking right now about stuff. I mean, you're not mad at each other, you're just distant, you haven't talked. I got to get you together. If your truck blows up, you're going to give him a call. So let me blow it up, if you don't mind. And in the end, I still have a truck, and I still haven't paid for it to get fixed yet. And Jesus said to them, follow me, and I will make you fishers of men. What's the qualification for being fishers of men? Follow me. That's all. Just follow me. I love it that God made it so simple. He didn't make this hard. And Jesus said to them, foxes have holes, birds of air have nests, but the Son of Man has nowhere to lay his head. And another disciple said to him, Lord, let me first go and bury my father. Jesus said to him, follow me and lay the dead, bury their own dead. Follow me. Look, focus on following me, not the other stuff. Don't focus on the other details. Focus on following me. Follow me. Please follow me. Why? It'll all work if you follow me. So what do I need to do as a leader? Follow him. What needs to be the most important thing I do as a leader? Follow him. And you know what's really cool about that? I can do that. He didn't ask me to jump 20 feet high jump. He didn't ask me to do that. He didn't ask me to be a ballerina, which is a good thing. He didn't ask me to do all kinds of stuff. He asked me to do something I can do. I can follow him. That's all. That's all he asked me to do. He didn't ask me to work it out. He didn't ask me to make everything good. He didn't ask me to take care of everything. He asked me to follow him. That's it. And he said to me, I just want to close with this idea because I find Ezekiel so amazing. This is you can go read the whole book of Ezekiel, but Ezekiel 2, 1 to 8 is interesting. And he said to me, Son of man, I send you to the people of Israel, to nations. I'm at a different point. The one on the screen says, and Son of man, stand on your feet and I will speak to you. And as he spoke to me, the Spirit entered into me and set me on my feet. And I heard him speaking to me. And he said to me, here's the rest of the passage, Son of man, I send you to the people of Israel, to nations, to a nation of rebels who have rebelled against me. Now think of this for a second. He's going to talk to Ezekiel and he's saying, Ezekiel, I am sending you to a nation of rebels. I am sending you to a nation of people who refuse to listen to me. You know, if I'm Ezekiel right now, what I'm saying, is there another assignment? I would like assignment number two. Door number one isn't working well right now. No, here's the challenge. I am sending you to the people of Israel, to a nation of rebels who have rebelled against me. Listen to what he says now. They and their fathers have transgressed against me to this very day. Now, think of it. Ezekiel, I'm sending you to this group. This group of hardened rebels. I'm sending you to them. You know, if I'm thinking in my head, you know what I'm thinking right away? I'm thinking, all right, bring it on. You're going to really make them soften, aren't you? I'm going to see great results, aren't I? You know the story of Ezekiel, don't you? He didn't see squat the whole time. Can you imagine the assignment here? You know why Ezekiel could do it? And he did do it. You know why he could do it? Because he understood that leadership means followership. That's all it means. All he has to do is follow. He doesn't need to make it happen. And he says this, the descendants are impudent and stubborn. Have you ever read a description in the Bible that has been so tough on somebody? I mean, let me read it to you. I send you the people of Israel, a nation of rebels, they rebel against me. Their fathers have transgressed against me to this very day. The descendants are impudent and stubborn. I send you to them. And you shall say to them, thus says the Lord God. You're going to use my name and you're going to say, this is what God says. This is what you're going to do. And whether they hear you or refuse to hear you, for they are a rebellious house, they will know a prophet has been among them. That's the best that can happen. Whether they listen to you or not doesn't matter because they're going to know I was there because you've listened to me. They will know a prophet is among them. And you, son of man, now he's talking to Ezekiel as a leader. And you, son of man, be not afraid of them. Wait a minute, you're selling me to this bunch of rebels and you're telling me not to be afraid of them? No, that's right, don't be afraid of them. Nor be afraid of their words. It's kind of like Goliath talking to David. It's like, oh, you're blowing smoke, man. Why? Because you're talking to a child of the king who's going to take you down. Don't be afraid of their words. Though briars and thorns are with you and you sit on scorpions. Can you hear the assignment that he's getting? Look, I'm sending to these people who are a bunch of goofballs. they're not going to listen to you, and you're going to be in pain all the time. Remember I told you about my dad last night, or this morning, or whenever I did. Whenever I told you. He stayed with his church because they were his people. And you, son of man, be not afraid of them. Be not afraid of their words. Their briars and thorns are with you. You sit on scorpions. Be not afraid of their words, nor dismayed at their looks. Can you imagine what he was going to face? For they are a rebellious house. And you shall speak my words to them, whether they hear or refuse to hear. For they are a rebellious house. But you, O son of man, hear what I say to you. Be not rebellious like that rebellious house. Open your mouth and eat what I give you. Ezekiel, you want to be my leader? Here's how you do it. Listen to me. Follow me. That's all. Yeah, but what if there's no results at all? What if there are none? That's not your problem. That would be my problem. And besides that, I could never make any of you make the right choice in this room. I can't do that. I could spend the rest of my life trying, and I cannot make you do that. God knows how frustrating that is. But he gave me something I could do that I can do. Follow me, he says. Oh, I can do that. Now I can relax. Because I can't make you do anything. I can't make my own kids do anything. I can't make my students do anything. I can't make the thousands I talk to do anything. I can't do that. So what do I have to concentrate on as a leader? Believe it or not, I don't concentrate on leading. I concentrate on following. I need to follow God. I concentrate on submitting. I need to submit to the needs of my wife and my family and the people I lead. I need to submit. See, I'm a follower. I'm a sheep. And I pick up my cross daily, my purpose. And I focus on what I'm supposed to do, and I do it. And I let the master decide where this thing goes. I don't decide that. I often, and I'll close with this idea, I often walk around camp, and nobody knows it because I'm a big tough guy, but I'll walk around camp, and every once in a while I'll stop, and the tears are just there. I honestly can't believe the place right now. I can't believe what God has done. It's way beyond my capability. I mean, not just a little. It is way beyond my capability. But several years ago, I asked God to do something. It was my David and Goliath prayer, and I know I've shared it here. It's my Elijah prayer. When David looked at that Goliath guy, he said, "Today you will die. And I will feed your bones to the birds." My own rendition of it. Because you don't know who God is, but you will today. And then he looked back at his brothers and he said, "And today you will learn that God does not work with swords and spears." And then he went on and took on Goliath. What was his wish? That the pagans of the world knew God. And that the Christians of the world understood faith. What did he do? He followed God. And he took stones and he did what he did. I mean, I don't know what else to do, but I know how to throw stones out of this slingshot, so I guess I'll do that. And God, you're going to have to take what I do, as inadequate as it is. When I walk around our camp, I'm telling you, that's exactly how I feel, like Mr. Inadequate. But I have a goal. And several years ago, I asked God, "Would you please use this place to show the pagans who God is, and that the Christians, that we no longer trust in swords and spears, but we trust in you." And he's been doing that. And if you walk around our place, do you realize how scary it is sometimes? Our place, just to stay alive, needs $6,000 a day, 365 days a year, just to pay the normal bills. And we have no PR people, no fundraising people. We need over $1,000 a day in gifts to just do our normal budget. Not for burnt buildings. Not for new chapels. There are so many times where I'm totally overwhelmed with the fact that we're even there. But we are. And the only thing that God asked me to do is follow, not figure it out. Follow. And you do know that it's his prerogative to close it one day if he wishes it's his place. You see, I think leadership is misunderstood. It's not having a bunch of people follow you. It's having you decide to follow God and to make it so others can follow you. And in that process, you'll be a leader. But if you try and make it so others follow you, what's going to happen is you'll probably be manipulative. You'll probably wear yourself out, and you'll probably be discouraged most of the time because you're focusing on the wrong thing. You're not focusing on following God anymore. You're focusing on whether people are following you or not. And then you're going to have a tendency to want to straighten out things that you shouldn't straighten out. You should leave some things hit the fan so that they can get straightened out. And as you follow God, he gives you the wisdom on how to do that. But he's the only one that knows. Because there's some times where you give people a hug. And there's some times where you throw them out of the temple. And you got to know when. And the only way to know that is follow. Follow the Spirit. Follow his guidance. Let's be good leaders by being good followers. And let's reframe it the way it's framed in the Bible rather than going to all the leadership seminars and all the rules about how to get people to follow you. Let us decide to follow. And then put ourselves in front of people and say, follow me, because I'm following him. And that's as simple as it is. Father, thank you for making it simple. Thank you for making it something we could do. In Jesus' name, amen.